Hi everyone and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone and welcome to Pixels. This is a show where we cover the news from the video games industry. We cover consoles, PCs, mobile, a lot of things actually, anything that has to do with gaming. Today we have some news about the Nintendo Switch online account service thing that you're going to have to start paying for. And we have some news for the E3, you know, the E3, the thing that happens in June and that has a lot of announcements for games. This is thanks to a leak, which we'll give you the details of in just a few minutes. We also have a bunch of other little tidbits, some happy, some less happy. But first, let me introduce myself, Patrick Beja. I'm your host, and I'm very glad to be welcoming once again, Ed Mitchell. How's it going, Ed?
Everything's good over here, doing well. Only woke up about 45 minutes after Patrick said we should start, so we're all good. Everything's good here.
Did you literally just wake up like five minutes ago when you sent me the first message?
My alarm went off, and then I looked up my phone, and I saw like three messages from you, and I was like, oh, hey, I totally forgot about this.
We're supposed to do a show. Well, you know what? We're doing it now, so it's almost as good. But let's start with the Nintendo Switch online service details that were announced a few days ago. So this has been, well, it was pre-announced. They said that they were going to have this service that would launch at the fall of 2018 and that we would need to start paying to be able to play online on the Switch. And they didn't have all the details, but we pretty much could figure out from the little tidbits they had given what it was going to be. So here's what it is. It's $20 a month. It's way more expensive per month if you don't subscribe for a year. Oh, did I say $20 a month? No, it's $20 a year. Way more expensive if you subscribe for less than a year. There are options for a month or 3 months. It allows you to save your data, your game saves, in the cloud. So you can finally manage to do that on your Switch. So if you lose it, then you don't have to lose all of your save data. And it also gives you access to 20 NES games that are basically that have added functionality, online functionality, stuff like that, which are some really people will remember fondly games. And some games that are a little bit filler. There's, you know, Mario, Super Mario, Zelda, the first one, stuff like that. So first quick impressions on this service. What do you think, Ed?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I wish they would kind of include more than just some NES games. You know, like the games that they listed as kind of examples, they're great. Legend of Zelda 1 is a fantastic game, and Super Mario Brothers is a classic, obviously. As people started to realize when the NES Classic came out, the games for the NES are kind of hard to go back to. Mm. And if you compare that to the Super NES, games are still NES games are classics, but I think it's much easier to go back to Super NES games because of the game design has aged a lot better than the NES games. I think that it's a massive disappointment that there's no virtual console.
And they've stated the virtual console, you know, that banner under which they're putting all the games is not coming back. And I can talk about this in a second, but
right. Yeah, I mean that doesn't mean that the idea of selling old Nintendo games on the Switch is just not going to happen. It just means that they're not going to call them virtual console games.
And I think the reason why people are disappointed that it's not coming back under the banner of virtual console is that there was a hope that maybe you could still have the games you had already bought on the virtual console. And that's the disappointment. That's why they're not bringing it back. But
That is a big thing. I think that them not doing that is kind of a disservice to the people that were loyal to them during the era of the Wii U, where they didn't sell a lot of those, but the Wii U is still the console where you can play every single Zelda game that's ever been made. You know, like, just as an example.
Yeah, I like the idea as well. I bought a bunch of stuff that I was hoping were going to come back. Hoping against hope. I know Nintendo isn't in the habit of being nice to its customers in that way. I bought like Mario Galaxy, I think 1 and 2. I bought Metroid Prime. I bought a bunch of stuff, which, yeah, sadly. And maybe those weren't virtual consoles. Maybe they were just Wii titles that you had to reboot your Wii U in Wii mode to play.
Yeah. The virtual console ones are the N64 and Super NES games that and I think Game Boy too that were available on the Wii U. There was talk about maybe virtual console including the GameCube games on the Switch, because now it's a more powerful console, obviously. So the fact that there's just no talk about it and they're just completely ignoring that part of their fan base when the Switch is an obvious great use case for that, I think that is kind of a disappointment on my perspective.
I think for me, definitely the NES games are, the NES games are the least interesting of the bunch. And the SNES games are way more, as you said, playable for gameplay reasons, but also for graphics reasons. The 16-bit era has aged a lot better than the 8-bit era.
Link to the Past is still a classic. Super Mario World is still a fantastic game.
And I think those might be coming to the retro consoles, you know, offering that they have with the 20 games that you can play as long as you're subscribed. They're going to be rotating some in and out. And I think they're keeping some, you know, announcements to be able to say in a year, like, now we're having Super NES games, and next year it's going to be like GameCube games or N64 games and stuff like that. So
to comment on the save cloud backup thing, I think that is something that a lot of people think should have been like baked into the console to begin with, and you shouldn't have to pay extra for So Xbox has and PS4 have save data backup in the cloud.
I think you need to pay for those, but at least on PS4 you can save on the USB drive.
Exactly. So you can save in another place.
And especially on the portable device, like if you lose it, this is almost like you have to
or get
take the service
or
because
you know, like that.
The portable device, obviously, the PS4, it's going to be if it breaks down, which, and the Xbox, it's probably not going to happen. We're not in the Xbox 360 era anymore. and you can, even if it does, you can maybe salvage the hard drive, but then it's encrypted, so maybe not. But I mean, obviously, the Switch is very portable, so much more likely than that something will happen to your save games. So it's almost, not quite, but it's kind of a little bit mandatory to get the service, which feels bad.
Yeah, I mean, so like if we're talking about the kind of different parts that are offering for this game, for this service, we already talked about how the NES games are kind of not a great part from our perspective for it. Some people love the NES games, so it'll be a good nostalgia trip. But and then the save data cloud backup, we think should be kind of baked in, or have some other kind of alternative. And so that just leaves the online play, which I didn't buy Splatoon 2 or ARMS, and I played Mario Kart 8, like, mostly with my wife and not online anyway. So I don't know. I don't know.
So here's what I think will happen on my end. I will not get it until... Yeah. I do, you know, for whatever game comes out that I want to play online for a week, and then I'll promptly forget about it and probably renew it automatically without thinking about it. I think that's what's going to happen. I don't think I need it, but it's cheap enough that I don't, you know, it's a third of the price of the other ones, of the PlayStation and Xbox prices, which they had to do. Does it offer less? I guess it doesn't really offer the free games in the same way.
The The games that you get for PlayStation Plus and Xbox
are actual current games, or like 6 months old or a year old. Yeah. But you know, it's also a lot cheaper. It doesn't feel great, but on the other hand, on Nintendo's end, they're basically creating, let's say, you know, they now have, what, 17 million consoles? Let's say, what, half of the, maybe not half, a quarter of the people buy the service. That's 5 million, roughly, let's, you know, adjust. 5 million times 20, that's 10, what, oh, wait, I can't count. 5 times 20 is 100. So is it 100 million a year that they get for all of this?
For 5 no. million consoles?
For 5 million consoles. That doesn't track.
That's no. 20?
I can't count. 20. 5 times 20 is 100. And that's 100 million a year they get from, like, out of nowhere. That they didn't have the service previously. So they are going to generate that amount of money. And maybe, thanks to that amount of money, they're going to improve the service a little bit, because they've never had stellar online service on the console. I don't know what... It's kind of fine. You do it as well. And I'm fine with having to pay for online service on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One when I use them. It's just... It feels like this is... a half step, because I don't get the bonuses I get on the other one. But it's cheaper, so I don't know. It's probably the best way they could do it for it being competitive or semi-competitive. So,
yeah, I mean, if they start, I think I'm not going to sign up, like you said, to start. And if they start like adding more like not NES games to the
ooh, if they add SNES games, I think I'll get it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that's another reason to get it. But are you a Smash person?
I think they have. Sorry,
are you a Smash player?
I'm not
okay.
really. I mean,
are you a Pokemon player?
Yes, but not online. I always play those games single player, and then I put it down.
Yeah, but what if they have some awesome online functionality for both of those games?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I mean, Smash obviously will do, but okay.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, it's okay. It's an okay service, and I'm sure it feels not great for people who were playing the games online already to now have to pay for it, but it sounds like they didn't let us know first, at the beginning. Right. So. What else? We have some rumors. Some E3 leaks that have been starting thanks to our friends in Canada. We have Walmart to thank for this. They had a bunch of placeholder products that went basically live with the placeholder graphics, which were no graphics for the most part, and a lot of titles. And this, we weren't too sure they were actually real. But Bethesda went and played around with one of the announcements, which was Rage 2, and basically confirmed it. So it kind of leads credence to the idea that all of them are going to be real. The ones we have are Super Smash Bros., not a surprise, Borderlands 3, not a surprise either, Assassin's Creed.
That's actually a little bit of a surprise.
Oh, is it?
The reason why is because they've been teasing Borderlands 3 for a very long time.
In development, and it's been for a while.
And we knew it was in development, but like nothing, you've heard nothing about that game. And the fact that it's going to be announced potentially E3 and come out later this year is actually kind of a big deal.
Well, it's not necessarily going to come out. It might be for pre-orders and stuff like that, because they want to be ready. But yeah, you're right. Maybe it will be games that are coming out. You know, I think Randy Pitchford has been teasing it for so long. I think it's possible it's going to come out this year. And it's also, I was expecting it to be announced, so I'm not very surprised.
Right.
Assassin's Creed, which means they probably are going to be releasing a game this year after last year's game, which means they're not taking a break. Like, we might have expected them to now have a biannual rhythm, which apparently it's still annual. Destiny Comet. Comet was the name of the first real expansion, The Taken King, the code name, a long time ago. Maybe this expansion will fix Destiny 2, which it's in need of fixing. Lego DC Villains, Dreams, which we know is coming. Rage 2, as I said, that was a surprise. We didn't know that was a thing because Rage
we
was
also
not...
We didn't know that anyone wanted that, you know?
Yeah, I was listening, I think, to DLC, Excellent Gaming Show, and I think it's Christian Spicer who mentioned, you know, Doom, when they announced the remake, we sort of were, not the remake, but the reboot, we were like, maybe, do we want a new Doom? Just let the franchise rest in peace. Same with Wolfenstein, and both of those have been amazing. And I mean... Yeah, I've seen the trailers. Have you seen the trailer that Bethesda released for Rage 2?
No, I haven't.
Okay. It is not great. It's like, it's super edgy. Like, it's cringy. It's punks. It's not quite steampunk, but it's like super rebel. It's like 80s punk. It's neon punk. and it's live actors being super edgy on camera with like this weird Mad Max neon vibe that doesn't work at all. They're trying so hard with this trailer to be, yeah, we're punky edgy and we're cool. And it falls completely flat for me. Now the game itself seems to have nothing to do with that imagery. So even with that, it's just a trailer. The game might look awesome, might be awesome. The first one was, you know, cool enough. It was kind of an average game, kind of a disappointment given that it was the big title from id Software with Carmack behind it. But yeah, it's we'll see. The trailer really did not do it for me, though. And by the way, between Borderlands 3 and this one, one of the Rageland or Border Rage couple, it has to be good, right? One of them will be good. So
yeah. I mean, I think Borderlands has always been like a kind of tongue in cheek game anyway. So I don't see that like really changing with Borderlands 3.
No, me neither. I think what I'm hoping for Borderlands 3 is maybe a little bit of a reinvention of the franchise. I would be a little bit disappointed if it's just, you know, handsome, what's his face again, and, you know, yeah, the exact same thing, but with better graphics. That I would be a right. little bit sad. Then we have like the last game is Insurgency Sandstorm, which it's on an Xbox, and I have no idea what it is. Do you know? Is that a new thing or an old thing?
It's a series, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah, it's a not a series, but it is a game that came out on Steam back in 2014.
Oh, okay.
It's like a multiplayer shooter.
Right, coming 2018, PC, Xbox, PS4.
I don't know if Sandstorm is intended to be a console port of the game, or if it's intended to be a sequel. But it's made in Source Engine, so
okay,
that's kind of yeah.
And the game appears to be in closed alpha or something like that, and it's coming out in 2018. It's already been announced. So, all right, and that's about it for the leaks themselves. I'm sure there are going to be lots of other things coming, but we did have some communication from Sony and a little bit from EA. Sony mentioned, first of all, they talked a little bit about Days Gone a bit more. It's still a ways off. It's coming 2019, but they did mention that, they made a little bit of communication around. Honestly, it wasn't enough to warrant big news. It's just games. Days Gone is going to be 30 hours long for the single player campaign, and it's going to be fun and great. All right, we already knew that or hoped for that. They did mention, however, that their showcase at E3 is going to be a little bit different than it's been in the past. They're going to focus heavily on four games. Those are going to be Death Stranding, Spider-Man, The Last of Us Part 2, and Ghost of Tsushima. And they're going to talk about other games as well, but they're going to do a deep dive on those four, which I think makes sense. It's basically their exclusives. They're leaning on Microsoft as much as they can and presenting games that you can only get on this platform when Microsoft has very few of those to present. So it does make sense for them to talk about this, because that's going to be the thing that people go to the PlayStation brand for. And many of the games that are going to be presented on the Xbox stage, I'm guessing, are going to be playable on Xbox, on PlayStation anyway. Probably, except, oh, actually, I didn't mention, we have a Gears of War 5 teased as well, and, Splinter Cell, that was in the Walmart leak. I mean, The Division 2, we knew were coming, Final Fantasy Remake 7 Remake, Forza Horizons 5, so there are going to be some things, probably Forza and Gears of War 5 that are going to be presented, etc., etc. So, yeah, there are going to be things on the Xbox stage, which I also hope, well, for Gears of War, I really hope it's not Gears of War 4 2, which was, you know, anyway. Yeah, any thoughts on the Sony thing where they're
obviously Death Stranding is very very, like, people are waiting to see more and actually see some real gameplay from that. Whether we get novel. That or is it completely another story, but Spider-Man comes out this year, so this will be the kind of the last big trailer before we in gameplay, probably deep dive before we before that game comes out, so that
in September cool.
The Last of Us Part 2, I don't think that's coming out this year, or maybe it hasn't been announced.
Well, they haven't announced the date, but it would be surprising.
Yeah. But that Ghost of Tsushima, right, is that game, it looks really nice. I don't know if you watched the trailer for that.
Oh, yeah. It was presented at the December thing, the PlayStation Experience, I think.
Okay. It looks like it also was shown at Paris Games Week. So.
Oh, yeah. That was it. You're right.
Yeah. So, yeah, That game looks absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I would be really excited to kind of see more of that. And obviously, we haven't seen anything from Sucker Punch since Infamous. Second Son / First Light. So it'll be cool to kind of see them kind of stretch out outside of that shell a little bit.
Yeah, I'm very much waiting for... Yeah, I'm a big fan of Japan, and I was very excited about this. Can you hear the birds?
A little bit, that's fine.
Shush. Anyway, sorry. That's what it's like living in nature. that game, I'm very much looking forward to. Death Stranding, it's probably not going to be my thing, but many people are very excited about it. The Last of Us Part 2, I'm almost like, I don't want to see too much, but that's me. I don't see it coming out until 2019. They might announce a date. Ghost of Tsushima, we'll see as well.
For Death Stranding, I think that I'm gonna buy that game, and even if I don't like it, it'll still be worth it just to support Kojima's like whole thing.
Yeah. I haven't, you know, Kojima hasn't done it for me in so many years that I'm, and this is blasphemy to say this, it's like the one thing where I'm absolutely going against the gamer, like, core gamer
text. Did you just not like the most recent Metal Gears, or?
No, it was okay, it didn't, like, I played, I don't know, 10 hours, but I didn't get into it.
So I actually just recently, like in the past year, played all the way up through Metal Gear Solid 4.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very fresh in that world and in that space right now.
So you want more.
So I want more. Well, I can get more right now just by playing the Metal Gear Solid 5 and all those, but I just haven't actually sat down and done it yet.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm last game that I think this is not a show about Kojima, but I think he's a little bit too far up his own ass. Like it's not my thing. Whatever. I mean, there are tons of things that I love that some people really don't like. So I'm not trying to say that it's not all it's you know, that what people like about it is great. It's just it doesn't work for me. So Anthem is going to be playable solo all the way through. That was a question that people were wondering about. It's definitely looking like it could take Destiny's place. I mean, if the expansion isn't, it's no secret that people have been very disappointed with Destiny 2, me included. And I could absolutely get into a game like Anthem if it does what Destiny 2 failed to do. Of course, there's the expansion that's coming out as well for Destiny, but
I mean, when I first like kind of the first Destiny came out and the second Destiny came out, that I mean, obviously you were touting it and I picked it up, but it never really stuck with me really. But I think Anthem, if it has a good story to pull you along, then that'll be worth it to me. It's just Destiny. The first one had almost no story, and then the second one's it was too late for me to kind of.
Well, the second one had very little story.
Right, right.
It had
something, but it still was a little bit too.
It was
late
so dumb. It was so.
It missed the mark for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'll not contradict you, but disagree with you on one thing. For those games, you know, if you're talking about, what do I call them, infinite games, the games you can play forever, what's really important isn't necessarily the story, it's the gameplay. I would say that the gameplay is way more important than the story the replayability. And Destiny, what it did have going for it was the gameplay. Now, in the second one, they messed up the replayability, which was the issue. The gameplay is key. And Anthem might have a great story that will get you to play through it once, and that's great for many people. But if they want to become a game that you play over and over again with friends, then they need to have more than just the story. So
yeah, I mean, for me, a lot of games are the story kind of pulls me through, but and then I get addicted to the gameplay loop. You know, like a lot of RPGs and stuff like that. Like the very first thing that you experience is really the story, and if that hooks you in, then they start introducing gameplay mechanics until the you get to the end game, and then all of a sudden you're addicted to this gameplay loop that you don't want to put down, you know.
Yeah, I understand that. I think it's there are two, you know, there are very different experiences. Destiny is essentially a Diablo shooter, and as we know, the story of Diablo is not maybe its best quality. might get some hate mail for that. But yeah, I mean, Anthem, I could see it be really motivating if there was this incredible sci-fi epic that would unfold in front of my eyes. I'm just
it's
a little
BioWare.
Bit... Yeah, it is BioWare. It's true. But for, you know, they can't. If they manage to do that, and what it seems that they're trying to do, which is a Destiny replacement, essentially, a game that you can play over and over again, it's kudos to them. But I think most of the time, games that manage to pull me through their story are games that are designed entirely around the narrative experience. Games from, you know, Naughty Dog is probably the best example, obviously. So, yeah. I mean, we'll see. As you're right, it is BioWare, so maybe. And that's about it for the E3 stuff. Let's move on to smaller bits of news. Red Dead Redemption 2 has had a third official trailer, which I have to say, I wasn't so taken by the initial two trailers, but this one has sort of made me glimpse a little bit of the drama, of the dramatic qualities of the story, maybe not even the story, but the world and the stakes and the way the narrative seems to be built. It doesn't do anything specific. It doesn't say anything specific about the narrative, but it does show glimpses of the feeling that you're going to have, hopefully, roaming this world. And for the first time since they started communicating about this game, I'm starting to think, okay, maybe this will do it for me. Not, you know, I think no matter what happens, I'm going to give it a shot, and it's likely that it will do it for me because I loved the first one, as did everyone on the planet. But I just didn't get that feeling from the first trailers, and this one kind of did give me the feeling. So maybe. What else? You didn't see the trailer?
I mean, I'm watching it right now, but okay. I was sold on the first time it said Red Dead Redemption 2.
Right. And like, you're one of those people. Website. Like
I didn't need a free trailer to convince me.
Sad news for Cliff Bleszinski. The Bosky Productions studio has unfortunately folded operations. Of course, Bosky Productions is the studio behind Lawbreakers, which didn't quite hit the mark, probably in part because of the hero shooter frenzy and Overwatch, which took it all, basically. And they, if you remember, was it a month ago or something like that? They launched a very, very early access for Radical Heights, which was their take on a Battle Royale game, which when basically one day they said, all right, Lawbreakers, no more. But we're still working on stuff. And I was like, yay, maybe they're going to do something cool. It's Cliff Bleszinski. And then they released a trailer for Radical Heights. And I was like, wait, what now? This does not look like something I want to play. And apparently,
game is very unfinished too.
Yeah, very, very unfinished. And it's looking like this was really a last ditch effort, like a Hail Mary to try and save the studio, because they were probably already, you know, I'm guessing they don't have any more money, and they just had to stop. It's sad for Bleszinski. He's retiring again. For those who don't remember, he's the guy, he was at Epic, the guy behind Gears of War, which was so groundbreaking in its gameplay when it first came out. And yeah, so I'm sad to see the guy have to leave the industry again and the studio close its doors. But yeah, it seemed like the story was basically done a couple of months ago, and we just didn't know it yet.
Yep. Unfortunate. Yeah. But I mean, the world is a completely different place now than it was in when the first Gears of War came out. So.
Oh, you should tell that to Microsoft, because they keep putting it out exactly the same.
Well, they keep putting out Halo too, so.
You know, I really hope that Gears of War reinvents itself with this. Honestly, if they come out with Gears of War 5 with a trailer and some gameplay at this E3, and it's Gears of War 4, which was Gears of War 3, which was Gears of War 2 and 1, more or less, it will seriously diminish the faith I have in Microsoft. Like, this is a moment where they have to, it's not make or break quite, because they're still selling millions of consoles, but it feels like this is a chance for them to show the world that they understand they need to do things a little bit differently. And if they, it's been that for like a couple of years, and if they still don't do it, it will, I don't know what to think about Phil Spencer, but my opinion will probably change for him.
They have a lot to prove at this E3. Just in general, I mean, they can fall back on their Gears of War and Forza and Halo for only so long. I think that if they don't announce something at this E3 that is surprising or new or interesting, then I mean, the PS4 is already winning and going to win this
cycle, generation, yeah.
but if they don't do something, they're just gonna fall further in the hole.
I think I would say that something can be Gears of War 5 if it's interesting. You know, I'm very happy to pull my Xbox One out of storage and plug it back in, or even buy an Xbox One X or whatever to play an interesting Gears of War 5. I think they're two games away from winning the hearts of people like me who were very big on the Xbox 360 and who were disappointed by the Xbox One X, the Xbox One X. Yes, no, Xbox One. And anyway, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. Dead Cells is coming out of early access in August. Yeah. It's going to be available for PS4, Xbox One, and Switch on top of a PC. That's pretty cool. Game has been on early access for a long time. It's a really cool game. And it, again, it's one of those games that is perfect for the Switch. It seems
I know Dead Cells was one of the ones that a couple of people on the Game of the Year last for 2017 talked about as kind of some of their favorite games of last year. So I'm really looking forward to it coming out into a full release and getting it on the Switch and playing it nonstop. And yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, for those who don't know, it is a not a Metroidvania. It's a Metroid Rogue-ia?
Yeah, it's like a roguelite mixed with Metroidvania. So there's the Metroidvania elements of the platforming, and you gather like tools to be able to traverse better. I think
every run,
stuff like that. So it's cool.
It is cool, and with very weird pixel graphics that are really interesting. So
they look really, really good.
Yeah, French studio, by the way. So There you go, a little bit of favoritism here. Koji Igarashi has announced Bloodstained: Curse of the Moon on May 24th. Curse of the Moon is not Symphony. Not Symphony of the Night. What's the name of the actual Bloodstained game? Ritual of the Night. Ritual there you go. Night, yeah. It is absolutely not Castlevania. So Curse of the Moon was basically a stretch goal for their Kickstarter, and it's an 8-bit game, an 8-bit style game for the universe of Bloodstained, and coming
kind of
out
a throwback to the original Castlevania trilogy.
It very, very much looks like it's not retro pixel style. It is an NES game. Like, that game could come out on the NES for Switch service, and it would look completely at home. It's really weird because it feels so much like Castlevania, the original one. It is uncanny. And it's going to be coming out. It's like $10. It was developed by Inti Creates. $10. It's coming out on May 24th. And we still don't have a date for Ritual of the Night, obviously, but it will come out later. But that will be basically the 16-bit style version of that game. I supported the Kickstarter, so I'll get it, and we'll see what happens.
Oh yeah, I did too.
But you did sweet. Too. There
I'll
you
get
go.
It for. I was thinking about it. I was like, oh, I'm not sure. Like, $10 is a pretty good deal, and then I remembered that I supported the Kickstarter. So
there you we'll go. I think they just asked me what platform I wanted it on, and I can't remember if I said if it was available to get on Switch. I hope it is, because again, that's.
I know it's coming out on the Switch.
Yes, it is. So it would need to be available through the Kickstarter campaign on Switch as well, right?
Right.
Would have to be. Okay. I'll
think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the Nintendo Online Store supports codes and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. So there you go. We'll see how that goes. I'll check that out. Ooh, I also have Umbra. which
don't get distracted by Kickstarter. I'm doing it, so someone has to finish the show.
All right, well, I will stop looking at Kickstarter and tell you about do we really need to talk about Warmind, the expansion for Destiny, the like small expansion?
I mean, that would be an entire discussion that you would lead. So.
Let's not. It's an expansion for Destiny. It doesn't really fix the core issues that Destiny 2 has. Provides a little bit more content. I toyed with the idea of getting it for like a half second and then realized I had a million other things I wanted to do. so we'll see what happens with Comet. or the expansion for Destiny 2, the real expansion. Steam has announced that Steam Link and Steam Video are going to be available for iOS and Android. Or wait, I thought it was only iOS. No, it's both mobile and also Apple TV, by the way. It's Android and iOS. Yeah. So all devices, mobile devices and Apple TV and TV sticks for Android. And you're going to be able to stream your games to your Apple TV, and it's going to be compatible, or your phone, and it's going to be compatible with the Steam controller and probably other controllers as well. I don't think you're going to be able to connect your Steam controller to your iOS device. So
yeah, that's thing. I think it will actually.
Oh,
the,
does it work through
it
Bluetooth?
It seems like it says that it'll go through Bluetooth.
Excellent.
Obviously the other controllers. They use Bluetooth, but they use like a proprietary like hook into Bluetooth, so it won't work as well.
You have some made for iPhone controllers that are okay. So is that something you like? I could see myself using the Apple TV for this because I happen to have one. I can see, and you know, this explains why they've been selling the Steam Links in the past couple of Steam sales, like it was $5 for the device. Like plugging it in as well is a little bit of a hassle, and it's not as good as playing on the PC. Obviously there's a little bit of a lag, so it was kind of never plugged in. But if it's possible to use it on the box that's already plugged into my my TV, then sure, why not? I might use it from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's cool. I'm definitely gonna try it out on the phones. I don't have like an iPad or an Apple TV or anything like that. I have a Fire TV, but that right now that's sitting on the TV connected to the same TV that the Steam Link is. So I don't really see the benefit of doing that. I think right now my big hang up is mostly the fact that my Wi-Fi doesn't seem to work that well for streaming games. I've tried streaming Steam from my desktop upstairs to my laptop downstairs, and that doesn't seem to work that well. Steam Link works okay, so most of the problems I have, I think, are Wi-Fi related and not really like connected to the Steam Link itself.
Right. Yeah, it's always better to connect it wired, but
right.
Yeah, I think that's kind of cool. I especially if it works over like the internet, it's not going to work for every game as always. But if you have a good enough connection, I think you might be able to play some games remotely. But even if you can't, it's okay to it's not the revolutionary feature everyone had been waiting for, but I think it's a nice plus.
Yep.
We've had some financial results for basically every company is doing great. We talked a little bit about the manufacturers last episode, and now we have news from like Activision, EA, Ubisoft, and the Japanese ones as well, like Capcom is riding the Monster Hunter wave into the sunset. Bandai Namco is super happy with the performance of Dragon Ball. Square Enix is happy. Even Konami is doing well, mostly thanks to its games. They have a bunch of other things, but their games are doing well on mobile, which is their main platform. But still, so everyone's doing super well, making a lot of money. Good for them. There's one thing that was really interesting that came out of those. Basically, EA, during the EA call, the CFO, who's called Blake Jorgensen, sort of implied that there are 30 million Xbox One consoles in the wild now, basically sold to customers. He basically said there are 103 consoles for this generation that we can, you know, our customer or our potential customer base is, not customer base, how did he say it? The market is 103 million devices, and we know that there are about 73 million PlayStation consoles sold, so we can kind of infer that there are 30 million Xbox Ones, which you know, he probably would have that information from their partners at Microsoft, or at least very astute market surveys. And so I didn't think it was this quote-unquote bad for Microsoft. It's definitely a very low number compared to what they had last cycle, where they were about parity. And I thought they were around 30 million, I don't know, mid last year. And this is a number for end of last year, end of 2017. It's looking like the PlayStation 4 over the course of its life will reach maybe 100 million, maybe shy of 100 million, but it's more than double what the Xbox is doing. As people reminded me on Twitter, it's nowhere near what the PlayStation 2 did over the cycle of the console, which was like 150 million or something ridiculous like that. But still, it's a significant difference between the two consoles. At this pace, I mean, we'll still have to wait and see what happens with the Switch this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Switch catches up to Microsoft within a couple of years, which is kind of scary. But yeah, 30 million Xbox Ones, it seems. That's less than I thought.
It's funny that the EA was the person, or was the group that last time leaked the numbers for Xbox. It just can't get over themselves that they like being the source of the Xbox One numbers.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's the second time they did it.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, if the Switch outsells Microsoft, Microsoft is going to have a deep hard look at themselves in the mirror.
Well, that's, I guess, what we've been saying. It's a recurring theme for this episode. This is basically what we're hoping they've been doing for the past couple of years. If they start taking a deep look at themselves now, sorry, but it's a bit too late.
Yeah, too late. Exactly.
Anyway. So that's it for financials, which everyone's happy about. I did want to mention...
One quick comment.
Sure.
The Bloodstained retro spinoff game for the Switch through the backer stuff.
Yay! So, I'm happy. So I probably did that. I don't remember, but I probably did.
I'll send you a link afterwards. You can go survey and send you again.
I think I already did. I filled the survey already. Okay. So yeah, maybe, you know what? Maybe I'll check if I deleted the email and go check out that survey. Action required. Finalized your Bloodstained survey. Retro spinoff. Access your backer survey. It's probably going to tell me I already filled it. You are a backer. Change upgrade. Change answer. All right, let's see. This is fascinating. Oh, wait. Ritual of the Night is the one that I want, but oh, did I not? The retro spinoff. Thank you. I do need to get it for Switch. I just changed my answer. So... There you go. For the retro spinoff, actually, maybe I should do a Switch for the other one as well.
That's what I did.
Yes, excellent. So this is a reminder to all of you who are backers of Bloodstained. Just go change the answer if you selected PlayStation 4, because you probably want it on the Switch. All right, what else? Yes, I did want to talk about Fortnite. Oh, just a second. The SNK retro thing is a mini arcade cabinet. It has 40 games, which I'm still not going to get it. I thought it was it might be an actual mini console to plug into your TV. And this has it can be plugged into the TV, so you can still do it, but it's a little bit cumbersome. It has a 3.5-inch display, which is really tiny. I mean, sure, why not? I'm not going to buy it.
Not for me.
Yeah. But, you know, some people are going to like it. There are games like, you know, King of Fighters 97 and 98. There's Samurai Showdown 2, Metal Slug, Real Bout Fatal Fury 2, The Newcomers, a bunch of games. I feel like all of those games already have them, though, on Steam or something like that. But anyway, so there you go. The Kinect is coming back. Kinect is coming back via a HoloLens cloud-powered thing where you're going to be able to get the sensors and build your own application and use the cloud, the power of Azure Cloud, to do stuff. So the interesting thing is that they never took advantage of the Kinect technology for games, but they sort of embraced the modding community that used the Kinect for other stuff. And now it's kind of a proper version of that, where they're going to enable people to tinker with it and actually build proper devices, applications, services with the Kinect technology. So that's kind of cool in that way, but it's not gaming. So Fortnite. Let's talk a little bit about Fortnite, because I played
that game.
I did too. Finally as well. Wow. It's like we're synced.
Like 2 nights ago.
So I played a few hours of it because I figured I needed to, you know, it's so big, I need to understand what it is. So what did you think?
I thought it was, you know, delightful.
Really? That's a more positive adjective than I would have expected for some reason.
No, I liked it. The shooting is pretty good. The building mechanic is a nice little twist on things. I definitely played with people that played a lot longer than I had. So it's like you shoot them and they immediately put up like four walls around them so you can't even get to them, you know? Stuff like that. But I understand how the hook can be addictive. I'm not sure that the entire idea of the game is still for me. Like, I'm not sure how much I'm gonna go back to it. But the couple hours that I put into it was fun.
Yeah, I think I'm more or less on the same page as you are. The game itself is very well executed. I can start seeing how, you know, you can choose the places you go on the map, and it kind of builds its own little portion of the game depending on where you land, and if you choose to go where there are lots of people already, or if you go in a remote location, and the different places really are very different. There are places where you have little power-ups that allow you to jump higher and for a short time and stuff like that. It really is like a whole, not a whole world, but it's not just jump in, kill a few people, and hope you make it to first place. At a very basic level, it is, but there's a whole progression to get through. It's almost like a MOBA in that way. Like, there's the early game, the mid game, the late game, and it changes depending where you go, and it's different every time. So I think it's one of those things that is not for me, but that I understand now a little bit better. And more importantly, they have a mastery of the continued fun that they are feeding into the game that is quite commendable. The thing that sort of led me to finally give it a try was the Infinity War promotion partnership thing, where they have a mode where one player can get the Infinity Gauntlet and transform into Thanos and actually wreck other players, so you can league together to take him down, and then the glove falls down and one can get it again, and like it's a interesting concept. And they have a bunch of different modes, like they have 50 versus 50, which is on now in its second iteration, and you can choose the different modes, you can choose squads or whatever, there are a bunch of different things. It really confirms this feeling that Epic is a very adept company at managing a game, and they are eating you know, Bluehole's or the PUBG Corporation's lunch, it feels like, right now. Because they are keeping the game alive. PUBG, in comparison, feels like a dead wasteland.
Well, I think that
I just want to specify. A dead wasteland in terms of updates and fun and interesting things coming all the time. The game is still, I'm pretty sure, very successful for what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely helps that Fortnite is free to play, you know?
Of course, of course.
That I my friend that kind of was like, you should come play this game. He's like, yeah, I already bought the little battle pass thing or whatever, and he's only been playing it for like a day. So obviously they have the right hooks in there to get some people reeled in. But I think that, yeah, the fact that it's free to play allows people to kind of just jump in and try it out and see what it's about and then get hooked. And I think that's nothing but a good thing for Epic in this case.
Yeah, I do want to mention a little bit, you know, there are things like the hatch that people are looking at, and there were meteors coming before the start of this season. And for people who don't know how it works, you can play for free, of course, and all of the items, everything you can get in the game is cosmetic. So it will never affect gameplay. So that's a good thing, obviously. There are no loot boxes, but you can buy individual items, which are, as I said, skins or sprays or emotes and stuff like that. And you can buy the battle pass. What is it? $10, I'm guessing. Yeah. $10 for the season. And when you buy the battle pass, you accumulate rewards. The more you play, the more rewards you get. So if you play a lot, you get all of the rewards from the battle pass. And if you play just a little bit, you get some of the rewards. And you also have a free battle pass. It's called the free pass. And those get you a few rewards, but they are very, very, very few. It's like, I don't know, maybe a tenth of what you get for the paid battle pass. And they are not very interesting, which is fair. It did shock me a little bit, however, how expensive the things were. And
the items?
Yeah.
You mean?
Yeah. Because the skins are like $10 or over 10. You have to buy like V-Bucks to buy those items, so it doesn't translate exactly, but it's about $10 for the skins, and about $5 for the smaller items, like the smaller, less interesting emotes and sprays and stuff like that. $10 and $5, you know, this isn't to jump back into the whole controversy about loot boxes, but if you play for free, you really don't get a lot at all. Like, there are no way of, there are very, very few V-Bucks that you're going to get, like a ridiculously small amount. And you don't get anything when you're playing for free. Unlike, like, it's less than a game like Hearthstone, for example. You get a lot less than that, I would say. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm happy to be, you know, corrected. But that's my feeling, having played around a little bit with all of it. So you get very little. And if you want to buy into it, the Battle Pass is probably what you want to get, which is $10. I think it's a fair price, but there are so many kids playing it and the skins and the things like that. I'm wondering if the people, you know, lamenting loot boxes, I mean, you know that the kids are going to want that exclusive skin just as much in this game as they can as they do in the other games. Right. And it seems like the prices are, it's not, I'm not trying to say it's better or worse, but if you're very worried about the practices of the games that have loot boxes, I would think that you probably should be a little bit worried about those as well, because it feels like energy type games. Like the way they keep you coming back into this game are very reminiscent of some of the mechanics from mobile games where, I don't know, it did feel a little bit icky in the way, not as much, but in the way that some of the mobile games do, in some of the ways that the worst loot box based games do as well. Now, of course, this one is free to play and everything is cosmetic. So I don't really have a problem for it. But I guess my point is, if you have a problem with the practices of other games, I'm wondering why no one has ever mentioned anything about this one, because it's not as clean as I think you might expect. What do you think? Were you taken aback by it or not?
I mean, I was mostly focusing on getting into the games. So I didn't really look at the prices of anything. So, but the fact that you said that, yeah, I mean, it's definitely worrying. I think that one thing that's a little bit different than playing on an iOS game is most of the time on an iOS game, the parent already has their credit card kind of in the iOS ecosystem, so it's easy just to press a button and buy something. Versus on the Xbox, they have a little bit more fine-tuned control over that. They have the parental controls are really good on there. PS4 too, and also like they have, since it's a free-to-play download game, they have to go to their parents and be like, "Hey, can you put your credit card in here?" You know, to
I think it's the same.
A little bit of that.
Yeah, it's the same thing with the loot boxes, you know, that you get not on iOS. I think, you know, iOS and Android mobile games are the scourge of the earth. I think we are all in agreement in that regard. But I think this is kind of the same thing. And you can see the kids going like, "Oh, I want the skin, please. I like, my friends all have it. And can you give me $10? And, you know, $10 is not, if you're playing video games, it seems like if over the course of 6 months, you're going to buy 6 battle passes, so that's $60. If your kid is playing it all the time and it's a game that is really a huge amount of fun, I think it's worth it. But it's just it's not less worth it than $10 worth of loot boxes every month. You know, that's I think my the point I'm trying to make. If you enjoy loot boxes responsibly, you're probably going to be able to enjoy this game responsibly as well. And they have, you know, the daily deals on skins. They disappear in just a day, so you have to get it now. And you know all of those little things that will encourage you to get them. And if you don't have impulse control for loot boxes, I'm wondering if you will have impulse control for these things, you know, if you will have impulse control for this or not.
Right.
So anyway, so that I thought it was interesting that to me, it felt not as bad. I'm not trying to say, oh, it's all the same, but a little bit of nuance. And I guess that is about it. There was a survey about an interesting academic survey about reviews on platforms, on digital distribution platforms that yielded some surprising results. It was a very serious, as I said, academic study that found that most people, the median time before posting a review was about 13 hours of gameplay, 13.5. The free-to-play games, it's more like 1 hour of game time. And the negative reviews, usually it's around 7 hours of game time, which, again, I think is very reasonable. You know, I wouldn't expect most people who post reviews to be playing 13 hours of a game before they do. Even for a negative one, if someone doesn't like the game after 7 hours, it's probably warranted that they would say, well, it's not really a game I like, or they would criticize it in some way. They've also found that bugs are less of a problem than gameplay issues. So your game, if it's got solid gameplay foundation, then the bugs aren't as problematic as you might think. So it's important to get the gameplay right. And findings like that, which I thought were quite surprising.
I think the bug thing kind of goes back to the discussion we had earlier about like Destiny, about the gameplay really selling a game more than anything else.
Right.
There have definitely been games that I've picked up that have kind of like middling reviews, and I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I'll give it a try anyway. But if you pick it up and it doesn't feel right, like to move the character around or to do the combat, then you're just you kind of quickly lose interest. So I totally see that.
Yeah, agreed. And the 13 hours median time before posting a review, like, it really gives you faith into the gamer community and the internet. It's like, what? You mean people don't post an angry review after an hour? That's surprising.
Well, I mean, I'm consistently amazed by how it seems positive Steam reviews are. Like, you don't see a lot of reviews for things online that are overly positive on things. But if you look at games that are very successful and stuff like that, you'll see the little thing on the right that says like overwhelmingly positive or like most people consider this positive and stuff like that. And that's just kind of a hardening in its own part.
True. All right. Well, that's going to be it for this episode. Thank you so much for being on with me and waking up to do it.
Yeah. Thank you for being patient with and waiting for my alarm to go off that I set 30 minutes too late.
That is fine. Please tell the fine folks listening where they can find you on the internet.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. That's at Adesis. I stream Wednesday nights now at 9 p.m. Eastern time on 4pp.tv. That's our website that links to our Twitch channel. We have a podcast that I'm not on, but other people for the website are on that it records Thursday nights. And I think tomorrow I'm going to be playing Frostpunk, which is the game by the This War of Mine developers.
Apparently, it's incredibly depressing.
Yeah, it is totally. I played the first 40 days of the main story, and I think I'm coming up on the end game for it. So I'm looking forward to kind of finishing that up and then starting something new after that. So
recommend it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a lot of fun.
And for me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can find all of my stuff there. You can also go to frenchspin.com if you want to find this show and another one called The Phileas Club, where we talk about news and international politics and stuff like that. And we're friendly, and it's a fun time. So maybe you should check it out.
I really liked the discussion you had with the gun owners, by the way.
You did? Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, coming from an American who knows some people that have guns, but it's not like my big thing. It was very, very informative and interesting to hear a different perspective on that.
Well,
debate.
There you go. You
especially
can go check
out the fact that you managed to turn them into a little bit more in the middle on things than what everyone thinks these people that love guns are like, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's something we've consistently found on the show where we were talking about somewhat contentious topics is that, yes, we usually don't agree, but we're a lot more amiable to, you know, discussing things and arguing mm-hmm. things in a civil manner than maybe what, I don't want to say the media portrays, but what we think of each other because of what the media and the internet and each other and we all
And politicians and everyone kind of involved in the whole thing. I agree.
So if you want to check that show out, it's available at frenchspin.com. The link to that site is in the show notes. And check out the gun owners special. That's one that you might be interested in. For the next episode, I don't know exactly what's going to happen. We'll be relatively close to E3, so we might skip it. We might not. But for E3, we will probably be doing the usual live commentary with our friend Scott Johnson. We usually do most of the keynotes. That is really something fun we love doing together, commenting the keynotes or the press conferences is something that is like our Super Bowl for nerds and gamers. So we always love doing that. You can check out my Twitter or my Facebook for the details on that in the coming weeks. And that's going to be it. We will talk to you. I might do a solo show for the next one, a quick one. We'll see if there's stuff to talk about. If not, it will be E3. We'll talk to you then. Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.